This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Hello and welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. Thank you for listening. It means a lot to me that you take the time out of your day to hear what I have to say. Real quick, before we jump into the episode, I want to mention that you can go to covertnerd.net for the links for this episode and also browse previous episodes. You can also subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher for Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, whatever. Go to the website. You'll see all the different apps that you can listen to the episode on. Also want to mention that our sponsor, RainbowComicsAndCards.com, is a place you can go to find all the comics that you need. You can also go on Facebook to Rainbow Comics and Cards Lincoln to find out contact information for the Lincoln store, and you can talk to Tim or Taylor and then get you hooked up with whatever you're looking for. So without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up with some Tolkien talk. Today we have a special guest, Helen, and usually it's guys, Helen, so you're the first girl on the Covert Nerd Podcast. Congratulations.
Representing the women, yeah.
That's right. That's why I wanted, yeah, it wasn't just that, but yeah, I kind of wanted to get a female perspective on the nerd culture and the things that we all like. I know when we met way back at Toastmasters, you were into Game of Thrones, Dresden Files, Doctor Who, Lord of the Rings. What else am I missing?
Let's see, what I got on my bottle here. I got Lord of the Rings, I got Dresden Files, I got Harry Potter,
that's what it was.
Game of Thrones, Firefly, Doctor Who, Star Wars, Battlestar Galactica. That's just what made the cut for the bottle.
Wow. I know. I was impressed. I was like, you are into everything. But today we were chatting back and forth, like, well, what do we want to talk about? And we landed on Lord of the Rings, which is epic, of course. And do you think that is your kind of the phrase, the Mount Rushmore of fantasy?
I would say, yeah. I would also say that, you know, Tolkien was like the father of the genre. I mean, without him, he was the one who pioneered all of that. And he was the one who inspired pretty much all of the modern day fantasy writers. Everyone says, well, Tolkien was my inspiration. He's the reason that I got into this genre in the first place. It is like the pinnacle of fantasy, but it's also the inspiration for everybody. It's the birthplace of fantasy, really.
Sure. I think if you talk about orcs or elves or trolls or dwarves, they're like, oh yeah, Lord of the Rings is kind of the foundation.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where everybody else later on kind of built off of that. So tell us, I guess, when did you first read Lord of the Rings or Hobbit or Tolkien in general?
Actually, I read it because I had to in high school.
Oh,
it was assigned for a literature class. And I had like this underlying nerd thing, but I didn't really know it at that time. I was only like 15 years old. And we read that and I was like, oh, I'm a nerd. This is great. I found my genre. And so that was what kind of got me into the whole thing. That was my stepping stone, my gateway drug, so to speak, into fantasy. And then that's when I picked up other fantasy books. Shortly after that, I picked up Game of Thrones, which I know is a lot newer series than Lord of the Rings, of course. And then that was about the time that the Harry Potter books were really getting popular too, and so I got into that as well. But Lord of the Rings was kind of my intro, and I caught then. That was in high school in the mid to late 90s, and so that's when I first read those books, was for as an assignment, and then I realized how much I love them, and that kind of was like my head dive into the rabbit hole of fantasy and sci-fi.
So was it Lord of the Rings or was it The Hobbit that you read first then?
We actually read the trilogy in school.
Oh wow, that's a heck of an assignment.
Yes, it was. Well, it was a whole year. That was pretty much the whole year. It was dedicated to, we had a student teacher that year, and he wanted to do breakdown and read Lord of the Rings. And that was going to be our like entire year worth of reading was going to be that, and getting down into the literature of it and the literary meaning and all the everything behind it. And so that's what we spent the time doing. And our English teacher was like, okay, whatever you want to do.
Wow, that's a deep dive. That's not just, okay, one semester, we're going to get through all three and we're done.
No, yeah, we spent the whole year on it. So, wow. And so some of my classmates who were not, so because I was in a small town, we had, our class was the big scary class, and there was 20 of us in there. My graduating class had 20 people in it. And so nobody else cared about it, but I'm like, this is great. You know, everyone else was like, oh, this is worse than Shakespeare. And I'm like, no, this is awesome. And
I know. That was your gateway drug into fantasy.
It was awesome. I was like, yes, we should do this all the time.
I was kind of the same way. I was like, oh, I actually didn't do it in school. I just bought it on my own. I was like, what is this? I was real late in the game too. It was late 90s.
happened to see it at a bookstore, and I was like, oh, this looks cool. And then, yeah, once I got started, I was like, wow, this is cool.
Yeah, I know, right? And it was like, I didn't even realize that this was like the original OG fantasy world until I started getting into more fantasy stuff and hearing interviews with the authors and seeing their references. Like when I watched Lord of the Rings with my kids, and they were like, oh, those guys look like Dementors. And I'm like, I bet you that's where Roland got that,
yeah.
You know, and stuff like that, you know, and all these things, you can see the references in Lord of the Rings that other authors use in their work. And they talk about it too. They talk about how much of an impact Tolkien has had on them as authors in this genre.
Oh yeah, for sure. Speaking of the movies, then what was your thoughts on the movies versus the book? I mean, everybody of course has their opinion on interpretations of books. What is your thoughts on the movies versus the books?
You know, I really think that Peter Jackson did a pretty good job with, I mean, if you look at the books, there's so much. I mean, when you read Fellowship of the Ring, you're halfway through the book and you're still in the Shire. And you're like, is it ever going to do anything? Are we going to go anywhere? Are we going to be in the Shire the whole book? Like, a lot of stuff happens in this book. When are we leaving the Shire? So I felt like Jackson did a good job of capturing what was happening in the Shire, but not dwelling there so long. I mean, I get why Tolkien did that. He was building this idyllic world of what could the world look like if everybody was happy and peaceful and cared about each other. And then what does that look like when we tear it apart with war and all this stuff? But I felt like he spent a little too much time in the Shire in the books. Whereas I felt like Jackson in the movie, he did a pretty good job of showing us the Shire and then moving the plot forward, because the first movie would have been like 6 hours if he included all the Shire stuff, which,
yeah,
you know, it'd be like, why are we still in the Shire? Oh my gosh.
I agree. He was able to establish what the Shire's feel and look was in about 10 minutes and was able to convey that without, like you said, spending 2 hours just in the Shire.
Yes, exactly. And I think the casting played such a huge role. I mean, casting Christopher Lee as Saruman was just brilliant. I mean, he was so good.
Yes.
He was so, and you know, Ian McKellen as Gandalf. I mean, the way that those actors worked, they really brought those roles to life. And then Peter Jackson didn't get in the way of the material. Kind of like they did. No, I got a dog on Game of Thrones a little bit, because they had a great cast, which you can tell from seasons 1, 2, and 3 when they really followed the source material. And then when they started going off the rails of the source material, you're like, what is happening? This is terrible. But I felt like Jackson did not do that in the Lord of the Rings movies. He didn't get in the way of the source material. He let the actors use the source material in a really great way. And so I felt like he adapted it really well. I was a little concerned when we got to Return of the King, how they were going to handle the appendices.
Oh, and
he took out most of the appendices, which is okay, because that would have been a whole other movie on its own.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
I mean, you would have had to have a fourth movie that was 2 hours long just to cover the appendices. And it kind of felt towards the end like, oh, it's done. Oh, no, there's another scene. Okay. Oh, no, it's done. Oh, there's another scene. You know, so.
Yes.
I'm glad that he kind of drew it out a little bit at the end, but he didn't go into all the appendices, because we'd have been there forever. We never would have left the theater. We'd still be there 20 years later.
Yeah, it could have easily been 10 movies. And probably barely scratch the surface. So what about the controversy over Tom Bombadil in the movie versus not being in the movie?
That one doesn't bug me as much as what they did in The Hobbit, when they created all the extra storylines to include this elf romance and all this stuff. It's like, come on, man. That was just to try and drag out three extra, you know, to make one book into three movies. Cuts had to be made somewhere. Otherwise, you would be having 10 hours. You'd have a 30-hour trilogy.
Yeah.
If you left everything in. And I think he cut where it needed to be cut.
Yep.
And there might have been a couple places where you could have left something in, but it's like, does it really move the plot forward? No, not so much.
If you read the book, Tom Bombadil and it isn't as essential. It's fun, but it doesn't lead a whole lot to the story, lend a whole lot to the story. Whereas Radagast does, as far as being in Lord of the Rings, does contribute to that, in my opinion.
Yes. I'm glad they brought him into
The Hobbit.
The Hobbit, at least. You know, it was kind of like when I was watching The Lord of the Rings, like, but where's Radagast? So at least when they brought him in The Hobbit, I'm like, okay, we're tying him in. It's kind of in a weird spot, but at least we've got him in there somewhere.
Yeah, I agree. What about your favorite story arc in the books? What part of the story do you like best? Do you like the battle at Helm's Deep? Do you like the battle at Pelennor Fields? What part of the book do you like?
So this is a multi-answer question.
Okay.
Character arc wise, one of the changes that did bother me from the books to the movie was that Aragorn waited to take up the sword in the movies, which really annoyed me because he doesn't do that in the books. He takes the sword immediately in the books. And so this whole drama about him not accepting his fate and blah, blah, blah in the movies is kind of like, all right, I don't love how you're doing this. I mean, I'm glad obviously he's going to pick up the sword, but I love how he did in the books, how he just accepted it from the beginning. He's like, this is what I have to do. This is what I'm going to do. Of course, I mean, the Battle of Helm's Deep is epic on every proportion. I know that Pelennor Fields is bigger. There's more going on, but there's just something about Helm's Deep that just speaks to you. And I mean, it's great on page and it's even greater on screen.
Yeah.
We just watched it a couple weeks ago. And, you know, Legolas sledding down the stairs on his shield, shooting arrows as he goes. I'm like, how do you get any cooler than that? Even him taking out the elephant in Pelennor Fields is not as good as that, I don't think.
Yeah, that's true.
I just love that. And, you know, the rain and the darkness and how you think that they're not, you know, everything's going to be fine. They've got this wall to protect them. And then they blow it up and you see this weakness and they lose hope. And I never really felt like you lost that hope in Pelennor Fields like you did at Helm's Deep. I mean, it was pretty much like, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
And then the sun rises and the Rohirrim come over the edge of the cliff and you're just like, oh, yes, they're here. And it's even more exciting than when the Army of the Dead show. I mean, no offense. They're two of my favorite battle sequences. Helm's Deep is one and Pelennor Fields is two. So, I mean, I can't really compare it, but Helm's Deep just has a special place in my heart. I just love that sequence. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, you're right. The Helm's Deep is more grim because at Minas Tirith, you have the hope that Gandalf is still there. So he's kind of like, look, he's kind of our backup. If it goes real south real fast, we still have Gandalf. Helm's Deep, they don't. There's
no
help. If they give in, there's nothing to help them.
I know that the entire city of Minas Tirith is there and they have women and children, but they had taken all of their most vulnerable population and put them in Helm's Deep.
Yeah.
And so you have this feeling and you see more of that. They don't really show the people of the city that much in the Battle of Pelennor Fields as they do in Helm's Deep. When you see the people hiding in the caves and they're scared and they're crying, you don't really get that same emotion at the Battle of Pelennor Fields that you do at Helm's Deep. And so I just love it. I love both of them. So, and another thing that I noticed a big difference when I was reading the books versus when I was watching the movie, when we would get to the Sam and Frodo parts. In the movie, I'm kind of like, oh, great, Sam and Frodo again, seriously? Like, and I love Elijah Wood and Sean Astin, so it's not because I'm just like, maybe it was just Andy Serkis and the way he did Gollum's voice or something, but it just was like, oh, like, can we fast forward through this part?
You're
but
right.
In the book, I'm like, oh, a Sam and Frodo chapter, yes, I'm so excited. And then like when Frodo gets stabbed by Shelob in the books, I was crying, even though I'd read it before and I knew he was going to be okay. In the movie, I'm just kind of like, eh, whatever. Okay, so Frodo's been stabbed. You know, so I'm like, how is this so different? That's just a testament to Tolkien's writing.
No, I agree. You're exactly right. It seems a little slower when it's Sam and Frodo. Or you're right. Something just isn't there. Maybe it's because there's less characters. I don't know. Or maybe it's just because Gandalf is such a prime character in the movie. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. And you know, I mean, Elijah Wood and Sean Astin had great chemistry. So it's not like, well, you know, you didn't have a good, and they were strong character. They did a strong job. They were great at the characters. So it's not like there was anything against their acting. It just, I don't know, something about it just was like, oh, do we have to do another Sam and Frodo scene?
Story arc wise, they might be low on your list instead of.
I know. Well, yeah. But the funny thing is that the opposite in the books, you know, I mean, like, even when they're approaching Helm's Deep, and I know how much I love Helm's Deep, I'm just like, yeah, Helm's Deep. We're describing the whole castle wall and blah, 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 blah. Let's get back to Sam and Frodo. What are they doing?
You talked about people reading Lord of the Rings, and you latched on, but somebody didn't. Why should somebody read Lord of the Rings versus maybe some other fantasy like Game of Thrones or the Wheel of Time series or Shannara or some of those other fantasy books?
Well, first of all, I think that Tolkien's writing is really easy to follow. And so that's a good way to a good reason to start anyway, especially with The Hobbit. I mean, The Hobbit is an even better like intro book to it because it was actually written for children. So it even though the story is very rich and amazing, it was written as a good entry into the genre. And same thing with Lord of the Rings. They're written in a way that's relatable, even if it's not really your favorite style of writing or your favorite elves and dwarves and ghosts and hobbits. Even if that's not your thing, it's an easy read to do. Like if I compare it to another series that I'm really familiar with, like Game of Thrones. That's also written simply enough, but there's so many characters and there's so much going on that it's kind of hard to follow. I mean, you have to, I know this personally, you have to have charts and maps and who's related to who and how are they related? Oh my gosh. Oh yeah. This is so-and-so's cousin. And you don't need all that to read Lord of the Rings. You can just enjoy the story. And it's a good story too. So it's easy to follow. And I think that this is a good series to read because if you do continue reading fantasy, you can understand how other fantasy writers were influenced by this series. You know, like I was watching this happen all fold out, watching my kids watch it kind of in what I call reverse order, where they watched, they read and watched Harry Potter and then they watched Lord of the Rings. They think that Tolkien is stealing from oh my gosh, her name just popped out of my head. Harry Potter author. Anyway, they think that
J.K. Rowling.
Rowling, thank you. They think that Tolkien stole from Rowling. And I'm like, sweetie, no. He wrote this book like in the 40s. She wasn't even alive yet. She is getting influenced from him. And so I think that it's important just to have this as your baseline so that you understand where the inspiration and the references come from, because almost every fantasy writer's got something that can be traced back to being inspired by Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah. And some people have always... some modern authors have said, actually, if Tolkien tried to write that today, Lord of the Rings today, it probably wouldn't get published because a lot of people view, like you said, it takes too long to get out of the Shire. And people today kind of like a little more fast paced storyline. But I didn't find it that. I thought it was very intriguing.
Well, and that's, you know, I mean, it's the world building part. I mean, if you read, again, I'm just doing comparisons, but, you know, if you read, you know, The Sorcerer's Stone, or A Game of Thrones, which is the first book in the Song of Ice and Fire series, there's a lot of world building that takes place in both of those because you've got to create this baseline. You've got to show the people this is what the world looks like. And so when you read The Fellowship of the Rings, you're getting a lot of world building, which for some people can feel a little tedious, but it's necessary to lay that groundwork.
Sure. And some people, you know, the Council of Elrond, where they're talking about these worms in the desert and going into a lot of history and stuff, get a little lost. And I'm like, no, that was actually more intriguing for me. I was like, they're talking about this big dragon and there's this other dragon named Skatha. And they're like, what is all this other stuff, this ancillary stuff? But that's why people love the appendices. You talked about the appendices too. People just love that.
Oh, I know. I mean, I'm one of those weirdos that has like the charts and the maps and those, this has happened then and this happened then. You know, it's like when Martin started publishing his, you know, The World of Ice and Fire, and then he published the first part, you know, Fire and Blood Volume 1, you know, and this is all world building. It's history. They're basically history books. And that's what the appendices in Lord of the Rings are. It's basically a history book, which if you're a weird fantasy history nerd, you're going to be like, yes, this is great. Oh, yeah. I love this.
I love that stuff. But you can't tell me that Martin didn't get some ideas of that from Tolkien, because Tolkien in some of his letters said that he got more fan, air quote here, fan mail and questions about the appendices than he did the books. Because people loved all this little history stuff. I was like, wait, who is that king that is, you know, Aragorn's cousin, or where, you know, where did Isildur come from and all this other stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's some of the more fun stuff, is to go back and get all that history and straight in your head and be like, oh, yeah. And then this is, you know, and then this is Isildur's father who died in the battle, you know, at the foot of Mount Doom, and then Isildur and then his kid, you know, and tracing that line of kings from them to Aragorn and all that stuff. Yeah, that's definitely a place for history nerds.
In the Silmarillion, in the back, there's, well, you probably know if you read it, then in the back, there's the Akalabeth that talks about the fall of Numenor. People get kind of overwhelmed with Silmarillion. So I always tell them, just go in the back and read that 40-page story. It'll tell you all about Aragorn's history. It talks about Sauron corrupting the king and all that fun stuff. I'm like, that right there is just gold.
Oh, I know. That's, you know, and I wish that Tolkien had written more. You know, it's like, oh man, I want more of this history. I want more of this, because, you know, it's like, well, what happened? We know the baseline, you know, kind of a baseline story of what happened after he gave all these rings out to the elves and the dwarves and the men, but I want more of that. Like, I want more of this history. And
we can segue into that since we know Amazon is going to place their TV series in the Second Age. Is that what you want to see, is kind of the corruption of the king from Sauron, or what are your thoughts on, what do you want to see?
So much. There's so much of stuff. You know, it's like, I'm one of those people that I would literally watch the 10.5-hour movie if you literally translated every single word from the page to the screen. And I'm one of the people like, I will watch the whole thing. But obviously you can't, you know, that's not a general audience kind of thing. You're going to lose them. I would love to see how Sauron slowly ensnared the souls of, especially the souls of the men who took the rings, and how, you know, how the Wish King of Angmar came about, you know, and how the Nazgul became what they were, and how that corruption got into them, and how that affected the people around them. Because, you know, it's not just like they were living in a vacuum, and it was just, you know, oh, here's this king and he went evil. You know, how does that affect the kingdoms that they're ruling and the families that they are connected to and all that stuff? And how does that ripple effect move out and affect the land and their subjects too?
Sure, sure. Yeah, because they get into a little bit of it in the Akalabeth, and then in some of his ancillary books that Christopher, his son, edited, they talk a little bit about it, but they really don't get into a lot of detail. It's pretty vague.
I know,
so
yeah.
I think just the making of the rings and how he gets to Numenor and corrupts the king, that alone would probably be, they could probably drag that out for at least 8 episodes.
Oh, absolutely.
And then the sinking of Numenor and kind of that time period, it would be really interesting.
I'd love to see more about the other humans in the world too, because, you know, by the time we get to the events of Lord of the Rings, we've got basically two main kingdoms, Gondor and Rohan. Well, we know that there were 9 kings. So where did those other 9 kingdoms go? Did they just get swallowed up by Gondor and Rohan? Who are the people from the, you know, with the elephants? And, you know, they kind of had a very, if you were in modern, if they were in our world, they had a very Asian feel to them, you know, Indian and Persian, and, you know, and so it's like, who are them? Who are they? Where did they come from? What's their backstory? How do they fit into this world? Where do their lands fall? So I'd love to know more about that. That's one of the things I love about, like, the song World of Ice and Fire is we've got our main kingdoms in Westeros that we learn a lot about, but then you start learning about the lands that are kind of spread out that we know of, you know, and I'd love to have more of that from Middle Earth, and who are all these people and where do they come from? And
they talk a little bit about it in one of his books, that when Sauron and the kings of Numenor started getting corrupt, they established these colonies in the south, which is the Harad, where the Oliphants are at, and they call them the Black Numenoreans. They were worshippers of Sauron and Melkor. And so that's where he never really names where the kings came from, but they suspect, I think he mentioned maybe one of them came from the Black Numenoreans in the south. So like the mouth of Sauron, he would have been one of the Black Numenoreans. And so that's where they came from. But yeah, they could really spend a lot of time exploring all of that, and maybe even spend maybe one episode on each of the 9. Or maybe 2 episodes.
Oh, that would be so cool.
So maybe 2 episodes even, just on the 9. I mean, then you still have the 7 dwarves, the 7 rings of the dwarves.
Oh, yeah.
The 3 for the elves.
Because you've got, I mean, you get a lot of focus on Elrond and Galadriel, but Galadriel's husband gets a ring. And we have, like, we see him as a side character in one scene. I think he has 2 lines.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, okay, but, you know, like, what about that guy? He got a ring too. So how does this all factor in? And
yeah, you could spend a season just on Galadriel and Elrond and their involvement of this. And you have, you know, the Balrog shows up in Khazad Dûm. I mean, you could spend some time on that.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
they could spend 10 years of just doing
easy
15 episodes a piece.
Absolutely. Well, and you can see from, like, what they did with The Mandalorian, you can do world building with characters who are not from the main series. Because, you know, everyone hears Lord of the Rings and they're going to think of, you know, Frodo and Sam and Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli. But you can obviously do a lot and have a very successful series without ever having any of your main characters even be in the series at all. And so I think there's a lot they could do with that. There's so much they could do with that.
There was some talk of trying to get Gandalf in there. I'm like, nah, don't do that, because he wasn't in the Second Age, like you were talking about on The Hobbit, trying to kind of force. It's like you said, there's enough characters to play with already. You don't need to add any extra. You'll be fine.
No. Yeah, you've got plenty. And then that way you don't have to worry about, because if you bring Gandalf in and he does something or says something and you're like, wait a minute. But then that means that what he did and said in the movie makes no sense, because he would have known this. And, you know, you have to be so careful when you bring in characters that already exist. It's like what happened when they did The Cursed Child. And you're like, no. Or the Fantastic Beasts movies, you know, and you're like, wait, this makes no sense in far as Voldemort's timeline. And so, you know, I think it would be a mistake for them to bring in any original characters or reference any original characters from the trilogy. I think they could just do their own thing, make it like The Mandalorian, where they don't really reference anybody.
Speaking of The Mandalorian, Jon Favreau, the guy that did he was a fan. And so he made it like a fan. And I think that's what Peter Jackson did in the movies. he was a fan of the books. I was like, let's get somebody that is a fan of the literature and do it the way that the fans would want it done, not trying to add their little spices here and there. And then it ends up being, like you said, like Fantastical Beasts or some of the other movies, like, it's kind of ho-hum.
I know, because like the first one started out great, and then they started getting into timelines where it started to affect what was happening in the main seven Harry Potter books. You're like, wait, there's no way that could work, because now you've completely screwed up all of the stuff that's laying the groundwork for. So I think they just need to
stick to what they can and go from there. So,
Well,
you mentioned that you started Lord of the Rings back when you were a teenager. How has your affection over the books changed, or has it waned and gone up and down, or has it kind of stayed pretty steady? Where has it gone?
It's been kind of a roller coaster. You know, I mean, you can only, especially with something you know is not going to have any more material coming out. You know, obviously Tolkien's not going to write anything else. He's not alive anymore. And so, you know, it's not the same as like for Dresden or something where we've got two more books coming out this year, or Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire, which theoretically has two more books coming out sometime before who knows when. So, but you know, I read it in high school, I loved it. I read it a couple times more after I read it for class because I just enjoyed it so much. And then when they announced that they were making movies out of it, I, of course, had to reread it, you know, read the book, watch the movie, because you can't not do that. So, of course, I did that. And that happened when I was in college. And actually, it's kind of funny because I was in a sorority when that all came out. And we all each had a different person from the fellowship that we were going to marry, which, of course, obviously, we were never going to have. And so we called ourselves the future.
Who was yours?
Aragorn.
Okay, I figured.
So we were the future wives of the fellowship, which my sorority sisters are probably like, no, you're not supposed to tell anybody that.
That's awesome. I love that.
But anyway, so obviously a big spike when the movies came out. And now that I'm introducing my children to all of this, these worlds and everything, another big spike again. But I mean, I've always loved them. I don't know that, you know, it's something that I've always come back to. I probably reread the books every couple of years, just because it's one of those, you kind of keep it fresh in your head, especially the main trilogy. I don't read the ancillary stuff as much. Like, I haven't read anything outside of the main trilogy or The Hobbit for probably 15 years, just because there's other stuff I have to read too.
Yes, exactly. There's only so much time in a day.
It's only so much time in the day. We have our bookshelves are literally overflowing with books that have either been read or need to be read.
Yes, exactly. Well, you talked about your kids. What did they think of The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, the books, movies, or what that look like?
They enjoyed The Hobbit a lot. It was one of the longer books that we tackled reading with them. We had already read the Harry Potter series, so I felt pretty confident that they could handle listening to The Hobbit, but it was a little longer, but they really enjoyed it. And then when we watched Fellowship of the Rings, I tell you what, kicking and screaming, I told them how much they would love it. And then they were just like, I don't want to watch that. 5 minutes into it, I couldn't get them to turn it off.
See?
So I'm just like, oh, come on, guys. And I loved it, though, because I didn't even prompt them on this. They said, those are the trolls that got frozen by the sunlight, because they walked by the trolls that were turned to stone.
Yes.
In Lord of the Rings. And my son goes, hey, are those the trolls from The Hobbit? And I was like, nice catch, dude. Nice catch.
Ah,
and
nice.
So they got really into it. Yeah, I had to twist their arms, though, to get them to watch it at first. I'm just like, oh, really? Come on, guys. I know, they're...
For boys, it's not to be sexist, but I mean, there's swords and there's fighting and there's trolls and the dragons. What's not to love?
I'm trying to tell them, I'm like, there's sword fighting, you know, kind of like the grandpa at the beginning of Princess Bride. There's sword fights, there's action, you know, all this other stuff. And man, I mean, the same thing when I got them to watch Willow, like I had to hard sell that. And then when they were watching it, they were like, this is great. And I'm like, I told you. Like, trust me, man.
When have I steered you wrong?
I know, right? I'm like, I got you into Star Wars and you love that, you know? So I'm just like, it's like, if mom suggests it, then oh, we can't do that.
It's like, come on, I'm a nerd. You'll love it.
You're going to like this. Trust me. I promise you. I'm not taking you down a weird road, but whatever.
I know you cosplay in the past. I don't know if you have recently, but have you cosplayed as any Lord of the Rings characters?
Yes, Arwen is my favorite to do. Yes.
Oh, awesome.
Yes, I don't have any pictures. I was like, I was going to try and dig up a picture and I couldn't find any pictures of me as Arwen. When I first cosplayed her was back when I was, you know, when the movies came out and I tried to get as close to what Liv Tyler had done. And my hair was pretty long at that point. It was about mid-thigh, so it worked out really well. And then I cut my hair back, so I had to use a wig for a while. And so I'm growing my hair back out now. It's about hip length now, so I can almost pull it off. But it needs to be a little bit longer to really match what she had. for hair length. And so,
well, that makes sense, I guess. If you were the wife of Aragorn, you got to be the Arwen.
Yeah, I got to be Arwen. Well, and you know, there's really not a lot of great women characters to cosplay from. I mean, there are some good women characters, but there's not very many of them.
No. Let's see.
You've got Arwen, Eowyn, and Galadriel are the three main ones.
Yeah.
I for some reason, Eowyn, well, especially what they did with her in the movies, just really annoyed me. You know, the whole pining after Aragorn thing. I'm like, oh, come on. You're trying to build this strong, fierce warrior character, and then you give her a stupid love triangle side story. Like, let's not do that.
Yeah, so I guess if there's a criticism, that might have been one of them.
That one really annoyed me. But I did love how they, you know, in the end, of course, they still had her kill the Witch King, which is good. You know, everyone talks now about, oh, the women heroes feel so forced. And I'm like, I love that he did that back in the 40s. You know, I mean, he had her kill him in the books. And her killing him in the movie, it wasn't even an issue. Like, it was, of course she's going to kill him, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Way ahead of his time, I guess, in that regard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you would think that she'd be the one that I'd want to cosplay because she's such a strong, awesome warrior. But I like Arwen. I just like being like elf person. And I do love the scene that they gave her in the movies, which I know is not in the book, where she faces off the Nazgul in the river. And she says, you want him? Then come and claim him. And then she, like, brings the water up and washes him away. Yes. That's one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah, they did switch characters. That was Glorfindel, I think, was the name of the elf that actually showed up in the books. But some people barked about that. But I'm like, oh, now that it fit. I think that was a good thing.
Yeah, it worked.
It worked just fine.
It worked. And she sneaks up on Aragorn and she catches him at sword point, you know, and she's messing with him. And she's like, ooh, a ranger off his guard, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you get him.
Yeah, I thought that was a great scene. Back to the favorite scene. I thought the scene in Khazad Dûm with the Balrog, I think that was one of my favorite, I think, by far.
My children, too. They reenact that all the time. You shall not pass. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, why did I show this to you?
One that's a little more ominous is when they decide whether they're going to go in there, and he flashes back to talking to Saruman about the Balrog, and he kind of gives him the backstory. He's like, do you know what the dwarves on, you know, dug out of the Khazad Dûm? And I was like, Christopher Lee, I mean, delivers it. I mean, how can you not?
I know, right? You know, we always have this like dream cast fantasy thing that we have for Dresden if it ever gets made into a TV series / movie. And there's a character that I really would love to have had Christopher Lee play. And I'm like, oh man, why couldn't we have made this series before he passed away?
No kidding. He was, I think I read, he was the only person in the movies that actually met Tolkien himself.
Yes,
because they were at Oxford together, I think, is what I read.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Yeah, that he actually knew Tolkien, and it's just like, oh my gosh, he's so good. And I mean, he's such a great actor anyway. He's so good.
When he was doing The Hobbit, he couldn't walk very well, so a lot of his obviously scenes were done with stunt doubles, but so they don't show him from like the waist down because he could barely stand up at that time, but he was able to do it, you know. He's able to reprise the role and still keep going.
I know. I was happy that that he was there, that they didn't try and do Saruman as somebody else, or, you know, that they didn't cut his part out. I'm glad that he was able to do that. And I know he was a big fan of the books as well. Yeah. So, I mean, I know he was, there was a hilarious interview with Viggo Mortensen, and he said that they offered him the role of Aragorn, and he came home because he knew his son read the books, and he told his son, he said, yeah, they offered me this role, and I don't, you know, is it even a good role? And his son was like, are you kidding me? Take that role. Do not turn it down. Take that role. Call them back right now.
So Viggo had no idea, did he?
No, he did not know what he was getting into, but his son was like, don't even talk to me anymore. Go call them back and take that role right now.
Yeah, because they might give it to somebody else. I can't imagine that as anybody else. Like you said, they cast that perfectly.
I feel like I can't think of any actor that would have been better cast as somebody else. They all just knocked it out of the park. I mean, they were all so good.
What about Lord of the Ring games? Do you play any, you know, board games, card games, video games that are based on Lord of the Rings, or do you have any of that?
Not for a long time. I did it in college. We did the board games, and we actually kind of did like a made up our own Lord of the Rings like D&D campaign.
Ooh, nice.
And it went so bad. Oh, okay. Oh my gosh, it was so bad. Most of that was just because we had terrible rolls. Every time we'd roll a dice, it'd be like, this is gonna be great, and it'd be like all ones, like, oh crap. Like, this is not good. This is not going to go well.
There's always that. There's always the proverbial person on your campaign that just always has the worst roles at the worst times.
I know.
And usually I'm the one with that. It's like, all you have to do is roll this. And you're like, I need to still get it wrong.
No. And then it's just like ones. You're like, oh, seriously? This is not.
I think they have a lot of them that are kind of pre-made now. So you just kind of took what they had and modified it?
Yeah, we kind of took like the, because, you know, this is back in the early 2000s, so there wasn't as much as there is now. But we took some of the base games and like took the characters and the character descriptions and then just kind of took our own D&D profiles and built it off of the character descriptions from the games that they had. Sometimes people would just go really off. You're like, Legolas would not do that.
And this is at this is at the sorority?
Yeah.
Wow. Sorority girls playing D&D.
We have a lot of nerds in our sorority.
That's awesome.
Funny story. I'm in seminary right now, and so, you know, a bunch of future pastors, and D&D is one of the most popular games that we play.
That's awesome.
We play D&D all the time. It's like, yeah, your pastors are really big nerds.
That's different than the 80s with the satanic panic on don't play D&D and you might die and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Now, all the almost everybody in our seminary is like, when are we going to get together and play D&D? And of course, now we're doing it virtually and stuff like that. And so it's like fully our congregation's new.
How big of a nerd you are.
Yeah.
We did a live event this last weekend with our group that we have, podcasting group, entertainment group. One of the things that we did is we talked about Lord of the Rings, and hopefully maybe with this episode, people will go read the books, but then also encourage people to read some of the extra stuff. Because like I said, Christopher Tolkien did a lot of work to gather up his dad's notes. And I don't know if you know how he did it, but he would find his dad would scribble in a notebook a paragraph about elves. And he took that paragraph and put it in and figured out, okay, it probably goes here in the story. Or here's a story about Beren and Lúthien, you know, ancestors of Aragorn. This is where this goes here. And so he even found some stuff scribbled on napkins as the cliche story. And so he's really got some good stuff, like the Silmarillion. He did that after his dad died and put it all together. His dad had most of it put together, but he finished it for him.
I love that they kept all that stuff, that, you know, the scraps of paper and the napkins and everything didn't get thrown away, because that'd be my luck. I'd be like, just, oh, what's this napkin, you know, and just throw it away and be like, some epically important piece of the story was on it.
Yeah, you're exactly right, because, you know, his dad was probably like, I'm not ever going to use this, and just kind of throws it in a closet or something like that. And as you know, when people pass away, a lot of times that stuff just gets thrown in the trash and just think.
Yeah, you're just like, I just want to get this place cleared out and...
Yeah, but he kept all of that and has some excellent stories. So I would encourage anybody listening to go, obviously, check out Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. What would your reading recommendation be? Do you think you do The Hobbit first and then Lord of the Rings, like you said?
I would say, yeah, I think The Hobbit builds into that really nicely. It makes more sense. I actually read them out of order. I read Lord of the Rings first and then read The Hobbit afterwards. But when I read The Hobbit, I'm like, oh, that's why that was like that, you know, so... It's nicer to have that knowledge before you read Lord of the Rings, because then you're not getting the afterwards revelation of, oh, okay, I get it now. Better to understand it ahead of time. Side note, when you were talking about paragraphs about elves, I do love that Elvish is actually a full language. You can learn Elvish, trying to in college. And I got a little bit, but I've lost it all now. But I was like, I'm going to learn Elvish. And then that didn't.
Can you say anything in Elvish for us?
I can't anymore. I didn't learn very much. I had like two or three phrases down, and then I lost it. It was like 20 years ago now, and I'm like, I don't remember any of it anymore.
Do you listen to any podcasts or read any other stuff about Lord of the Rings or YouTube channels? Or
not recently, just because, as I said, I'm in seminary, and so I'm mostly reading theology books right now and then writing papers. But
there's a real good one I think you'll like. It's called Men of the West on YouTube. It's just 20-minute little snippets, but it's a deep dive into, say, the One Ring, or maybe about the Path of the Undead. And he just spends 20 minutes hyper focused on one little topic, and they're not very long. So I would recommend that. Cool. Men of the West. And then there's a website called the Tolkien Gateway, which is basically a big encyclopedia. Hey, I want to learn everything about Legolas, and it'll just have paragraph after paragraph about it. Then there's some books. There's one called the Tolkien Companion, which is written by J.A. Taylor, that has all sorts of stuff in there. And I had those together. So when I read the Silmarillion, I would read the Silmarillion. If I came upon a name or a place or something I didn't understand, I'd go to the Companion, read about it, and then go back to the Silmarillion. So it was a bit of a slog, but it was worth it.
Yeah. That's kind of like when I do like a deep read of Song of Ice and Fire, I'll be like, okay, and this is this, and this is this, and I'll have the maps and everything, you know, and like the family trees and all that stuff. And same thing, like if I'm reading the Lord of the Rings, I'll pull out the appendices and cross-reference what's happening in the appendices to what's happening in the story. And, oh, who's that? Oh, okay, yeah, this is this guy, and this is this guy. And because you can't just read it. You can just read it, but, you know, if you really go, like, way down the rabbit hole, you can't just read it. You have to be
a little bit of a super fan. But I guess maybe if you just like maybe kind of shallow stories, maybe I guess The Lord of the Rings maybe isn't for you. But if you really like fantasy, would you say if you like Game of Thrones, you would like Lord of the Rings? Would that be a pretty?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, even if you haven't read the Song of Ice and Fire books, you've just watched the Game of Thrones series, I think that you would still like Lord of the Rings books. Absolutely. I mean, anytime that there's a series or a movie or anything that comes out that has a book for a source material, I usually try and read the books first. And then I did the same thing with The Martian. You know, when I heard that they were making that into a movie, I read the book first. And I'm getting through this book and I'm like, I swear to God, if Mark Watney dies by the end of this book, I'm never reading another book by Andy Weir as long as I live. And spoiler alert, it's been out for a while. He lives, thank goodness. So I'm like, okay, Andy Weir, you're safe. I'm not gonna abandon you now. And like same thing when I heard that they were gonna make the Expanse series into a TV series, I started reading the books first. But that's because I'm a book nerd. You know, if you're not a book nerd, then maybe that's not your thing. But sure. If you're a book person, absolutely. I always am like, always read the books. Always read the books.
And nowadays anymore, everything's on audio now. So if you're driving to work, you can knock out, depending on what your commute is, but you can knock out quite a bit. And while you're working around, I don't know if you'd listen to audiobooks, but I'm just working around the house. Throw on my headphones and turn on a book and just go.
Yeah, half the time my kids start talking to me and I'm like, wait, no, this is an important scene. You have to be quiet for a minute. I'm currently re-listening to Dracula because I watched the Netflix Dracula series. And I know that, I mean, obviously it's Stephen Moffat and he took liberties with Sherlock. He took liberties with Dracula as well. And so I'm like, okay, I got to remember how that story went because it's been so long since I've read Dracula. So I had to go back and reread Dracula again just to...
Is that Castlevania, you mean, or is that...
No, there was actually a Netflix series called just Dracula. It's a mini series. It's only three episodes. There are 3 hour-and-a-half long episodes. And it started off pretty traditional Dracula. And then they hop forward to modern time. They bring Dracula into the 21st century.
And Stephen Moffat, you said?
Yeah. So the creator of Sherlock, he did some Doctor Who stuff.
Doctor Who, oh yeah.
Yeah. Doctor Who kind of goes all over the place. Moffat's not in Doctor Who anymore. Doing Doctor Who anymore right now. But anyway, yeah. So they bring, and some people didn't like that they brought Dracula to the 21st century. But I thought it was kind of an interesting twist. I was kind of like, this is kind of funny. And some of the jokes that it was a little bit more humorous. I mean, it was still very Dracula, very scary. Well, what you'd expect from Dracula, but there was also some humor woven into it. A lot like Doctor Who. It's scary, but it's also humorous at the same time.
No, I thought he did good on Doctor Who. I loved it
in Doctor Who. And so Dracula was kind of the same. And so I thought bringing him to the 21st century opened up a lot of options to tell some jokes that you couldn't tell in the, you know, if you left it in the 1800s. But anyway, it's a personal preference. I liked it.
What's it rated? Is it hard R?
Oh, I definitely are. Okay. Yeah, I would not let my children watch it. Hey kids, let's watch Dracula. No. You definitely do not want to. It's definitely adult only, but it's really good. I enjoyed it.
Speaking of ratings, what do you think Amazon should do? Should they keep it PG-13 like the movies, or be more Game of Thrones, or what do you think?
I think they can do it justice while keeping it PG-13. I mean, they kept the movies that are, because if I recall correctly, the Lord of the Rings movies are PG-13.
PG-13, yep.
I don't think that Lord of the Rings needs to be R-rated to have the same impact, because he doesn't really write a lot of R-rated stuff. I mean, even the battle sequences aren't really intensely graphic. And so I don't think you need to have it be like that.
That's kind of my opinion. I hate to be a prude, but I'm like, he conveyed the intent without having a lot of gratuitous violence and sex and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's fine. I hope they keep it somewhat like that. But, you know, I guess if they get a little edgy, that's okay. But
I mean, I look at like what they were able to do with the Infinity Saga with Marvel Universe, and they were able to do that entire Infinity Saga at PG-13. And obviously it was phenomenally popular. You know, oh man, that was an epic fail. I mean, no, it was great. They managed to do that at PG-13. I don't think that they would have any trouble. I mean, and even the original Lord of the Rings movies were PG-13 and they were incredibly popular. I don't think that they need to go for the R rating. I don't think they need to try and chase after Game of Thrones. I think that it has its own thing. I think it could have a wider appeal and still be amazing without having to go after the R rating. That's just my thought.
I agree.
And I'm not against R ratings. I mean, I watched Deadpool. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I watched Game of Thrones. I thought it was great. But I just don't think that Lord of the Rings needs to go there.
Don't force it. You know, don't need to. It's like, we don't, if the source material really doesn't emphasize it, then don't try to force it.
Yeah. Well, and last year, I think there was a Facebook page called Geek League of America, and they did the greatest battle sequence competition. And it came down to two battles, Helm's Deep and Pelennor Fields.
Wow. See?
Both of them were PG battles.
Yeah.
Or PG-13 battles, not PG-13 battles, and Helm's Deep won. Yeah. And so it's like the most geek recognized battle in the entire fantasy genre was a PG-13 battle, and nobody complained about it. They were like, that's the best battle, hands down. So I don't think you need to.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not opposed to it. I mean, yeah. You know, shocking if someone's going to be a pastor. I really don't care, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. To each their own, but just as long as it's not forced, like I said, it's like, don't make something into something that isn't there. I
mean, he didn't really write it to, you know, even if you're reading it, it's not like, if you read the Song of Ice and Fire books, those are definitely like, even just the books, you're like, no, that is definitely not PG-13 content. But when you read Tolkien's work, none of that in my mind goes, whoop, whoop, you know, that there's a problem. It could totally be PG-13 without any problem.
Exactly. Well, why don't we wrap this up, Helen? It's been awesome. It sounds like we got lots of other topics I think we could explore. Talking about Dracula on Netflix, so I have to check that out. So you need to add that to your cup icon, the another vinyl to that.
I know, right? I have some dead space in there. I could totally add some more. I could put way more on there. Yeah, we didn't even get into like musical theater, like Les Miserables. And
I do like your story about the kind of the nerd sorority. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, I know, we were kind of known as the nerdy sorority on campus. Everyone kind of like labeled us that way. I don't even care. It was awesome. It was a great place to be.
They roll their eyes. They roll their eyes. You roll your dice.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Like, I don't care. We got D&D. We're living our lives. We don't really care what you guys think about it.
Yeah. You can get in their face and say, I'm marrying Aragorn.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So we have to tell your husband. He's Aragorn.
That's right. I will have to tell him that. You know, he's a Gryffindor, which I don't know about that. But, you
know. Well, at least he's not Slytherin or something.
That's right. My younger son, now granted, he's a little too young to have taken the test, but he wanted to because his brother did. He ended up in Slytherin.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was only 6, so I'm going to give him a chance to retake it and see if he's actually something different.
Exactly. Cool. Well, thanks, Helen. I appreciate it. Do you want me to plug an email or any type of way that listener can get in contact with you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just my first and last name at Gmail. I made it super simple.
Awesome. In case they disagree with you.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, oh, if you disagree with me, oh, that actually ended up in the junk mail.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So, all right. Well, thanks, Helen. I appreciate you taking the time to talk about nerd stuff. We'll have to do it again next time.
Oh, yeah. Next time I should sit down. We have, we actually have all the maps from Westeros in our basement. I should sit down there next time and have the maps of Westeros behind me instead of my living room curtains.
This is how I watch Game of Thrones, or how I read Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Maps
with the
everywhere.
Map right behind me.
Yeah. You can have like the how they solve a murder, you know, where they have the little thumbtacks.
All the boards
and
the tags and the exactly.
Yep.
Look like
that'd
a
be
conspiracy
awesome.
Theory guy, like, this is how this does this.
Exactly. All right. Well, thanks, Helen. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It was great talking to Helen about Tolkien, so I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And remember, go to covertnerd.net for more details on this episode and other episodes. Please subscribe and let me know what you think about the show, whether you like it, whether you want some different topics, or you don't like it, I guess, too. But also on this episode, the audio at the end, we had some connection issues, so you could probably hear a little bit of a difference. So I apologize for that, but that's what was going on there. So until next time, nerd it up.